Welcome to the Small Business Hour with your host, Mark Dio. It's 60 minutes of red-hot talk to help you develop your small business.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need. All right, folks, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio. I am your host. Joining me, the inimitable Matthew Walker, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, and we are your small business advocates. The show is dedicated to helping you to become more positive, more productive, and a whole lot more profitable. And every week, as usual, we try to bring you experts and expert advice on how to more effectively run your small business. So whether you have one employee, you, or 100 or 500 employees, you're still a small business. Anything under 500 employees is a small business by the definition of the Small Business Administration. And so if you're tuning in, the advice we're giving is effective for no matter how many employees you have. So we're really excited. Today, you know, we got a great show. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the fear of failure. We're going to talk about why you should buy local. We're going to do, of course, our Tech Corner, our Scam Alert, and we have with us, Matthew, Jay Abraham.
The vaunted Jay Abraham.
Exciting. Haven't had Jay on the show for a while. Mm-hmm. Very exciting to have Jay, really America's number one marketing expert. He's with us today, and we're going to talk to him. So let's go ahead and get started here, Matthew. You can participate. You probably already participate because you're already listening to us at smallbusinesshour.com. But if you happen to be hearing this elsewhere, you can always go to smallbusinesshour.com to listen to the show. And let's talk a little bit here, Matthew. There was recently, unbelievably, a rally that occurred in Fenton, Michigan, of all places. Now, I've been to Fenton, Michigan, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah,
in Fenton, Michigan?
Well, it was many years ago, and I was visiting, you know, one of my clients, and when I worked for, you know, the stereo company, my dad's stereo company, Marantz, I was out there. And, you know, we had some dealers. I'm trying to think of who. I think it was Highland Appliance in those days. They were in Fenton, Michigan. And anyway, there were several hundred small business owners, Matthew, who decided to march down Leroy Street, which is kind of like Main Street. It's kind of like the main drag.
It's the main drag there. Okay.
It's like Wilshire Boulevard, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And they're marching down there. Usually business owners don't do the marching. Usually people are marching on them, right? But yeah, they were marching. And what they were marching about is because they are encouraging consumers in Fenton to buy local. They believe that if the people in town would buy more from them rather than, say, on the internet or, you know, Amazon, you know, rather, you know, go to the local bookstore rather than Amazon.
Or even the giant chains that might be in town, like
probably,
the Walmarts and
probably
the
more
Targets.
So. The giant chains have probably more of an impact on them than the internet business. You're right there. You know, that they would be able to, you know, stay in business because there's a real eventuality they might be going out of business if they don't get enough customers with this difficult sort of economic time we're in here. But they're talking about how, you know, they sponsor the little leagues. They put the banners up at the football fields. They put the money in the collection boxes at church. You know, if
they probably employ a lot of the community, too.
What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that that's right? I mean, it certainly is, you know, the right of consumers to purchase wherever they want. But let's just kind of talk about this. I mean, if I'm going to go buy, let's say, my, you know, sundries, let's say, like, you know, toilet paper and paper towels and cups and, you know, all of the things, you know, soda and water and all the stuff you need to buy,
mm-hmm,
from Walmart or Sam's or Costco, I can probably buy that stuff at those, you know, large big box merchants there, those mass merchants, probably a lot cheaper than I would be able to buy them from, you know, Joe's grocery and sundries.
Yeah. But let's take a look at it a bit. If you're a normal consumer, what could you possibly save by buying all that kind of stuff at, say, a Walmart rather than at your local stores owned by small business people? Maybe a couple hundred bucks a year? Maybe?
Maybe, like, you know, 10 or 20 bucks a month. You could.
Yeah. And it, so, over the long run, you have to look at it. Is it worth $20 a month in your pocket to have businesses in your community close up and go away?
And so
that's a decision consumers can make.
I wonder what Leroy Street would look like with all of the businesses closed down. And so I guess you're right, Matthew. We have to think about the impact of this. Is that what would our town look like? Because think about this now. Because if there's no businesses there, then now you're attracting a different type of crowd that is more apt to crime. Mm-hmm. You think people are going to want to visit Fenton?
And do you think the service you're going to get from a clerk at Walmart if you need to return something is going to be anywhere near the same as what you would get from a local business owner who probably recognizes you?
Yeah. So I think there's a point here, folks. When we think about saving this economy, turning this economy around, people say, well, there's not much I can do. I mean, I'm just a little guy. I just work at Joe Schmo's and go and buy my, ice cream every weekend. I mean, what can I do? I go bowling, I mean, that's it. Well, if everybody went out of their way to support the local businesses instead of hiring the consultant from, the big city or out of town, hire the local person. Instead of driving across town to save a few bucks, buy next door.
If you're dealing with something where it is a commodity like that, where there's no difference between buying brawny towels in one place versus another, then make an effort to go local.
Yeah, I mean, even if there is a difference, tell your local merchant that, hey, look, these guys carry these products and they have these services, and if you could even come close to that, I'd rather buy from you. And I'll bet you they'll go out of their way to meet that need. So,
yeah, I think the level of service you get by dealing with a local company almost always far exceeds that of dealing with the major national, international retailers almost every time.
Well, it ties into what I say in the book, Matthew, and what we said many years ago on that show, which was one of the most popular shows we ever did. Corporate America is dying, and this is just another one of their death throes. So I'm excited to see them kill over, frankly.
Yes.
That being said, many people are operating today out of fear, Matthew. This economic situation, I think, creates a great deal of fear with people, and business people tend to put their foot on the brake. And, we tend to say, everybody, 100% of my people in my company have to be productive all the time. So if I see one person having one personal phone call, that's it. They're out of here, and everyone's going to know about it. So you might be hearing that, and you might say, well, Mark, what's wrong with that? Well, let me tell you about a company, Matthew, called W.L. Gore and Associates. Mm-hmm. Now, you might know this company. Have you ever heard of Gore-Tex?
Yes. In fact, Gore-Tex is very big in the world of bagpipes, Mark.
Is that correct? Now, our listeners don't know Matthew, but Matthew is...
I used to play drums in a bagpipe and drum band. A couple of them, actually.
Drum troupe, I guess you would say, with the bagpipe. And, we're going to have you on the show. Is there someone that you can bring their bagpipes along and have some bagpipe drum... music?
I'm sure if your neighbors are willing to put up with it, we could arrange for that, no problem.
Well, maybe instead of Fear Factor one week, we need to have the bagpipes. Nevertheless,
Gore-Tex bags are very popular. It's a weird product that they came up with, probably. Mm-hmm. And bagpipes were traditionally made out of sheep's skin and sheep's stomachs, were used as the bags. And there's still a few traditionalists that use those, but I would guess that 95% of the bagpipe players in the world have Gore-Tex bagpipe bags. They dominate the industry.
I wouldn't use anything but a sheep's stomach for my bagpipe.
That's a very sick Scotsman right there.
Yes.
What are you saying?
Just kidding. Just kidding. Get them wound up. Don't get a Scotsman wound up. Anyway, W.L. Gore and Associates makes the Gore-Tex for the bagpipes, and particularly rain gear. I think everyone knows of a Gore-Tex rain gear. It was really great repelling rain and stuff and water and stuff.
Yeah, they have like Gore-Tex liners and gloves and coats and shoes and everything.
He used it in the military. It was big in that. But little do people know, excuse me there, that Gore Company, or the Gore and Associates Company, W.L. Gore, has a lot of people. Matter of fact, most of the people that work there are complete failures, Matthew. Most of them, yeah, they're failures. And they admit it, actually. You see, Gore and Company has several thousand people working there. They're a $2 billion private company. They're not public. And most of those thousand or so people that work there create products that never leave the drawing board. In fact, the company is organized not as one big company, but as a group of little companies, as a group of, you know, maybe 15, 10, 12, 15, 20 people working on projects. And they literally operate separately, separate of the rest of the folks. And while they're all inventing and testing and modifying and finding appropriate markets for specific products that they create, out of the 15 or 20 teams that exist, literally only one or two teams create products that are successful and make money. The rest of the teams, which is most of the people in the company, actually create products that fail and never go anywhere. So many people will look at this and say, well, gosh, they need to just get rid of the rest of those people. But the interesting thing about it is it's not always the same people that make the successful products.
Yeah, I would have to assume it's not. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, one year it's like those guys, and the next year those guys actually fail totally, and the other group makes successful and then next year it's a So without having all of these teams creating, you know, failing at creating these products, they would never get the one or two teams that create the $2 billion a year in sales. And you'll know their products like Glide, you know, the, I don't know if you've ever flossed, Matthew. I know you do floss. You're very good at the dental hygiene, I know. But I like to use Glide floss because it literally glides. I mean, you don't get stuck and get bloody and everything. Glide is a revolutionary product. If we look at our computers, mm-hmm. we look at the what would you call it? Propeller head. The wire or the polymer, I guess.
Okay, so the wire is actually inside the computer itself?
Yeah, the multi-tet wire, you know, that flat wire, you know, that
connects. Yeah, riveting cables or things like that.
Motherboard or connects the drives and stuff. They mm-hmm. make those. And so,
oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A whole slew of products made by Gore, but they have built into their culture the lack of fearing failure. They actually embrace failure. They tell their people, their teams, to go out of their way to take risks and make mistakes because many of the products that are created are ultimately from errors. And so,
yeah, mistakes have led to a lot of products and things along those lines throughout the years. So you look at the formula they used to make rubber for tires now was considered to be a mistake when it first came about.
Absolutely.
They were looking for something altogether different. I know Silly Putty.
Silly Putty? Yep.
Total mistake. Some guy was trying to make something in a chemistry lab and that became an offshoot product. You look at Post-it notes. That was a failed glue that they were trying to make. And it all of a sudden it was this just really weak adhesive. But it lasted a long time. And
Band-Aids.
Yeah, these things are all huge sellers, and they were all mistakes.
They were all mistakes. Yep, they were all mistakes. And, you know, so don't be afraid of mistakes in your business, folks. You know, encourage your people to take risks, and if they fail – no, I'm not saying, you know, if people – if they fail at everything they do all the time, well, that's it. Pretty good sign. Maybe they're not right. But if you know, just because a product here and there fails or, you know, maybe they're not – focused as much as you'd like them to see all the time. Give your people some room to succeed. People have to have room to succeed. And so just talking about that. When we, you know, when we come back from our break, Matthew, we're going to talk about how, what, you know, a formula that you can create, because today it's tougher than ever to succeed. But we're going to talk to Mr. Jay Abraham, because he says that he loves a bad economy, and he thinks that a bad economy is the best time for a company to succeed. So go nowhere, folks. We'll talk about that. We'll be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at ComplianceParticipants.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name, Mark Dio, and of course with me, the inimitable Matthew Walker. We're coming to you live from Los Angeles, and we are your business advocates. Matt, you know, I am so excited today because I have one of my, I want to say idols, but really it's a guy who I've learned so much from. And have tried to apply and have tried to actually teach others many of the things I've learned. We have the world-famous Jay Abraham with us, Matthew. So I'm excited today because he has a new book out. It is called The Sticking Point Solution, 9 Ways to Move Your Business from Stagnation to Stunning Growth in Tough Economic Times, which we are in. Welcome to the show, Jay Abraham. So great to have you, Jay.
Mark, it's not just a pleasure. I've been a really enthusiastic observer, supporter of your work for a long time too, and you and I have met I think when the last book came out or something. So it's a delight spending time with you and renewing it again.
Well, that is great. That is great, and the feeling is mutual. Now, you know, your last book was Get getting everything you can out of all you've got. And it's been quite a bit of time since your last book. What has prompted you now to actually write the Sticking Point Solution, Jay?
Well, a couple of things, Mark, and it's pretty logical and pragmatic. We looked at the business world, the economic world, the financial world about a year ago, and we don't purport to be economists or brilliant psychic thinkers, but we felt that the economy was due for a quite a profound adjustment. We didn't forecast quite this, but you'd realize I've been doing this over 30 years. I'm 60, and so I have 4 recessionary cyclical experiences to my experiential credit. And so we thought when that happens, everyone basically was prospering or at least doing decently, not necessarily because of their acuity, their skills, their competence, their marketing or strategy. It was because they were caught up by the positive forward movement of the jet stream of the boom.
Yeah.
And we thought that when the boom stopped, there was going to be a lot of bodies hurtled to the ground. And we wanted to do something. This is going to sound a little, let's say, altruistic, and it's really not exactly. We wanted to give to the entrepreneurial market because we didn't think anyone else was going to be there to do it. And I've been doing this long enough, and I have a long enough term sort of a investment perspective. We thought, hey, we could invest very richly in the entrepreneurs when they're going to need it. And if we do our job and we help them through the morass and the bad times, they'll come back and they'll visit us sometime in the future because we'll have keeping them alive and thriving. So we were trying to be strategic, but we didn't honestly know how horrific things would get. We just knew that it was not going to continue that long, and a lot of people who succeeded in spite, not because of what they were doing, were going to be in for a rude awakening, would need someone to watch over them.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, there's a lot of folks who maybe, have gotten caught up in this, and they're suffering as well. And I think the Sticking Point Solution can be a way for them to sort of reevaluate where they've come from, and look towards the future. Now, the amazing thing here, Jay, about the book, and is you have always been considered America's number one marketing expert. I mean, that's kind of incontrovertible. I mean, you are to marketing what Tony Robbins has been, to self-improvement, and or Dale Carnegie for that matter. But the Sticking Point Solution, while it is focused on marketing, it kind of addresses business improvement and marketing improvement from a more sort of global level. Is that right? I mean, it's
well, I would say look at it in terms of leverage. We tried to figure out. We looked at where businesses were really struggling, failing. Not failing economically, but failing performance-wise or perception-wise, and we tried to make a list of all the key elements that would shift the results, the performance, the outcome of a business the easiest, and we reduced it down to 9 factors, 9 things that if you're doing them wrong now, if you just stop, even in a bad time, it's going to make a market improvement. So like if your business is dropping 40%, but you've got one or all these 9 factors helping cause that, and you can eliminate many of them, most of them, all of them, and each one eliminated will add another 10 or 20 or 30% performance. Your business can certainly sustain, if not grow, but we just tried to make it no-brainer. We tried to show people that most businesses are struggling, stalling, stagnating, spiraling down. You sort of know it, but you don't know why. And if you step back and you say, hey, here's the 9 most probable reasons, and here's exactly how to eliminate or manage it and improve it almost instantly. Not overnight, but very quickly.
Sure. Now, the interesting thing is this book is really timely in that you actually start the book. These are the words, folks, to our listeners, Jay. These are the words that the book starts with. They start with these words. I love a bad economy. Period. So do my clients. Period. Tell us about that. Why should we? I mean, Shouldn't we abhor
it's a great question.
The Vatican? Yeah.
And I'm flattered you read the book. That alone makes this interview unique. So I thank you for that, Mark.
Sure.
But let me give you a really provocative piece of a new paradigm to think about. I can't deny that the economy is down, and certain industries are down 30, 40, even 50%. But what most people are failing to recognize is that all business has not come to a tumultuous stop. It is down. If you realize that when business stops, almost everybody cuts back. They stop marketing. They stop giving services. They stop. They cut out staff. And the consumer, the client, the buyer who was attracted to them for what they were doing starts feeling alienated. If you realize that that's happening everywhere, but business is still going on, and if the first thing you do is don't cut those corners, but actually focus even more on bonding to, you know, to the buyer, the first thing you do is you try to preserve and maintain the maximum number of your existing clients. So let's say you don't lose 20, 30, 40% of the buyers like everybody else. Then when you start projecting to the outside market all these services, benefits, empathic activities you're doing to help really support the buyer, you're going to start appealing to the top 15 or 20% of the buyers from your competitors who were loyal to the competitors because they were giving them a lot of services and attention, but they're cutting that back and desperately going outside looking for new ones. Those people will come to you, and more importantly, because business is down, but business is still happening, there are always new people coming into the market. If you can telegraph to the market cost-effectively that you are the one provider, the one product or service that provides them with the ultimate outcome they're looking for, you're going to get 80% of them coming to you. And the bottom line is, Mark, number one, you can absolutely stave off business drop-off, but it's actually very realistic for you to be able to grow when your industry is down 30, 40, 50%. I don't know if that makes sense, if I explained
it
clearly or not.
I mean, it makes sense because you think everyone else in the marketplace, your competitors, are all slicing services. They're getting, I mean, some of the best biffs getting rid of their best people. Their highest paid people are their best people oftentimes, and those are the people that they're getting rid of. They're cutting back market coverage. They're cutting back, you know, maybe their product line. Maybe they're not coming up with a new product line this year. So, you know, they're going to just stick with what they have. They're not upgrading capital. And so what does that do to our competitive advantage? That destroys our competitive advantage. And, you know, the reality is, I agree with you. I mean, people get stuck because they end up putting their foot on the brake. They see the economic signs, and they're real. And then they just jam their foot on the brake, and all of a sudden, that's it. Now you kind of started the downhill slide. Now, one of the things you talk about in your book is, you know, you say, and you list all of the areas a business can get stuck. One of the areas that you mention is you can get stuck with erratic business volume. In other words, and I think this happens, you know, companies go out and they get a big deal, they get a big client, and all of a sudden this huge deal comes in, and now the whole company starts to orient itself around this one deal. Can that cause a business to get stuck? And when that business goes away, what happens then? I mean,
well, sure. I mean, here, and I'm going to mix and match because I don't know how much time we have, so I may borrow some elements from some of the other sticking points, but I want to address that. The big problem with most small, medium-sized businesses, Mark, is they never had a business system designed to target continuously on an ongoing basis the most desirable segment of prospects to communicate with them in a way that they could start a relationship, whether it's a buying relation or just an interaction, move that relationship to first purchase, move that first purchase to repeat and additional products and services, keep it recurring, and then get it to the point of where it's an automatic source of referrals and have that going ongoing from multiple different sources So what happens is most businesses have never had systematic, you know, strategic, extremely ongoing processes, programs, and strategic systems in place to target markets, bring people in, move them, you know, evolve them, gestate them through a progressive selling system. So, you know, basically their success, their prosperity, their business, their cash flow is due, it's just due to the vagaries of what's going on organically in the market. If they happen to have a good month, it's accidental. If they have a bad month, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the control they could really have on their business levels.
Now, one of the things I've learned from you, and I literally talk about this in my book, is to have some standards and systems and to monitor what we do. And sometimes good times are the worst times for a business, especially a small business, you know, $5, $10, $20 million business or more, because what happens is, you know, we get something good happen, and all of a sudden we abandon our standards and systems, Jay. And we say, well, we got this good piece of business. We've got this great alliance, this great partner. And you know what? We're going after that business. And so what happens is it can really cause our eye to get off the ball. And that business goes away. Now where are we? We have no standards. So you do recommend that regardless whether times are good or bad, that companies look to develop some kind of solid standards and systems in their business, don't you?
Yeah, if you want, here's the difference. It's a really scary realization. Most people involved in business transactions think they have a business. I think most of them are nothing more than erratic promoters. They have no system. They have no long-term strategy. They don't have everything working to keep moving and advancing and enhancing them towards a long-term goal. They don't have the best sources and the best, most powerful ways of reaching them. They don't have any of those things set up, and you know, this month maybe they make payroll and have a surplus. Next month they don't make it and they have to go to the bank. But now what's happening, as you know, is all the credit lines are getting reduced or eliminated. The
credit cards are
the rates are going up and the limits are going down. And you've got to switch to a far more systematic, strategic, maximizing and optimizing focus. But if you do, the liberating and the really joyous truth is your business can thrive. So not just survive, it can thrive. It can keep going, growing, and you can be in the catbird seat if you really want to.
Yeah, even in the tough economy. Now, one of the chapters in the book is kind of interesting. You talk about you talk about the fact of being marginalized. You say, I guess the chapter is if you're stuck being marginalized. When you say being marginalized, what do you mean, and how do you get unstuck from marginalization?
Well, marginalization occurs from a bunch of things. First of all, there's no distinctive difference between you and all your competitors, between your products and services and all your competitors. You got to be able to figure out how to bring unique proprietary advantage to what you're doing and who you're doing it for, beyond and above anything else comparatively out there. And one of the real keys to it, and it goes to one of the first sticking points, you've got to know what your competitors are doing to command the business they've got. If it's purely price, if you're going to compete on price, you got two things that have to happen. You've got to have pretty effective, efficient systems, and you've got to be able to do enough volume or you're going to lose your derriere. So people were saying, for example, that Walmart is so great because it's volume. Where they really make their money is they have a 9% distribution advantage, and that's the only reason they make any money. And you can't.
That's right.
I don't think most people listening are that good. Do you?
No, definitely. I mean, they've spent. I mean, how much time and effort and resources have they spent?
Oh yeah,
they've
spent billions of dollars. So if you can't compete on price, then you've got to be able to change the game you're playing. There's a bunch of. I don't want to go through a hierarchy, but there's a bunch of different categories. But the ultimate place you can put your business is an experiential based transaction where they're buying the product or service from you, but you're giving them such an incomparable experience. And not just mean you're being respectful, but I mean it's such an incomparable, different, positive, amazing, joyous. It is an incredible process to transact business with you that is unlike anything else. And so you don't have to be the cheapest provider. You don't have to have every option in stock. You can basically make the experience so well. So we teach a lot of ways to do that. One of them is a philosophical strategy, a strategy that I call the strategy of preeminence, which is the overarching ideology, culture, foundation I build into every business I counsel, every ad I ever create, every sales process I ever create, every corporate culture I ever create. It basically is based on establishing your business or your people as the most trusted lifetime advisor to the market you serve in whatever the category it is you are. And as the most trusted advisor, you don't just give people information. You don't just take their orders. You advise them. You counsel them. You give them strategic advice on what purchasing decisions they need to make for the greatest outcome for them. Most businesses will eagerly accept anything anyone will buy because they desperately want sales. If you are my most trusted advisor, Mark, you will never let me buy less than I should, in less quantity or quality than I should, in less combinations than I should, less frequently than I should, because I'll be the loser. And you won't let me buy from a lesser committed provider if the service support is critical, because not because you hate your competitors, but because you know I'll be the loser. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm saying you got me so excited here because I just wanted to say this. I just want our listeners to understand what that means, folks. What that means is that if there's somebody doing what you're doing better than you, and you truly are that trusted advisor, and you have this level of preeminence, and you can say, you know, who I am is more important than what I do, and you will refer them to that competitor.
You're absolutely right.
Shame on you if you have to, right, Jay?
You're exactly right. Now, but here's where it gets really cool. You can distinguish yourself many different ways. In this book, and the book is just a good short course, sort of quick fix, we talk about a number of things. One is how to create preeminence, and preeminence has to do with external focus, and it's stopping to be all excited about your business or your industry or your company, and instead being totally passionately excited about the people that you're making a difference to, you're contributing to, you're interacting with, you're selling to. You can create what we call a maven persona, which is you got like about 30 different ways you can distinguish yourself. That can't happen until you get clear on who you are, who you're not, and you also understand what the attraction is your competitors have over you, what their gaps are, how to really counter program. Sounds complicated, but it's actually easy. The problem is most people listening probably haven't even studied their competition. And they probably haven't. They definitely, Mark, haven't studied the alternatives. Let me give you an example. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Tell us. Give an example.
Well, let's say that you're in the business of selling, let's call it weight loss supplements. Okay? I'm just using it as a reference example.
Sure.
Drucker said something very important. The problem or the opportunity you're addressing as a provider of product and service may be singular, but the optional ways to resolve it are multitudinous and are constantly increasing every day because new innovators are coming into the market. So let's go to our example of the supplement. Well, the first thing is if you're selling supplements, you better know what every other company selling supplements is doing, how they're advertising, what their positioning is, what their mechanism is, how they're reaching the market, so you can expand your sense of possibility. Second, you better be able to analyze in that what they're doing right, but also where the gaps are so you can figure maybe a niche for yourself. Next, you got to go beyond that. How many other ways can people basically deal with the desired outcome, which is weight loss? You got to see how people are selling exercise equipment. You got to see how people are selling health clubs. You got to see how people are selling books and tapes and DVDs on it. You got to see how people are selling gastric bypasses, and you got to let the marketplace help orient you, and you got to basically be proactive enough and critical thinking enough to interpret what that all means and find the really killer opportunity in there.
Now, amazingly enough, and it's kind of scary, most businesses and most products, most commodities, most services, unfortunately, are carbon copies of the next. And unfortunately, what we do oftentimes is we look at the market leader, Jay, and we say, well, I'm copying them. They're leading the market. I'm doing everything they do. And sometimes, most of the time actually, that's the most dangerous thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, but for many reasons. One, you can't possibly know the intricacies below the surface unless you really study them. And most people never bought from them competitors. They never interviewed their competitors. They never interviewed the people that didn't buy from them or left them to try to. I mean, because it worked in an ostrich-like world, you know, 5, 10 years ago. It doesn't work today. But number two, one of the reasons I've enjoyed, Mark, and this is not meant to be arrogant, it's clinical. I've enjoyed such almost an unbelievable level of success with people I've helped is because I have a very simple philosophy. I take success approaches from other industries, and I basically translate them to industries where everybody does the same thing the same way.
Yep.
Because the things that most people observe in their industry are not necessarily the most effective, the most powerful, the most profitable, the most prudent, the most practical. They're just what everybody does, and everyone sort of follows suits. There's no law that says if you approach the industry, and I'll give you a good example. Everybody runs an ad in the magazines. What I do is I learned from another industry the fastest way to take over an industry when you have no capital and you don't have a lot of skill is you find organizations, publications, businesses that have direct access to the same market you want to reach, have the trust of the market, they've been dealing with it for years, but don't compete, and you engineer partnerships, strategic alliances, endorsement deals, where you get to tap into 10,000, 100,000 of their buyers, their readers, their members, their subscribers, and instantly you can build a multi-million-dollar business, and it's like a no-brainer.
Well, amazingly enough, the folks listening to and our loyal listeners know this, but one of the most popular, and Matthew knows this too, one of the most popular previous shows that we have in our archives, and since we've been doing the show for over 12 years, they're all available, and there's a lot of them, there's hundreds of them, is the Strategic Alliance show that we did with you. You remember that, Matt? Matthew, you remember that, right? And you can vouch for that. A huge click through on that show. And I guess we must have done that like 7 or 8 years ago together, Jay. We did that show.
Yeah.
But
well, but even more today, because I mean, there's a reality that I would love to share so people will get it. And it's one of the sticking points, but it has a very, very relevant purpose right now. Most small, medium entrepreneurs, Mark, they try to be islands. Well, first thing, the body of knowledge and the complexity of the world today is doubling every 6 months, and no one person has the intellect, the capacity, the time to do it all or know it all or master it all, so you need to plug into other people who've got skills, expertise, access, influence, experiences you don't. Number two, winning trust. I mean, there's a good friend of mine is Stephen M. R. Covey. I don't know if you've ever interviewed him, but he has one of the best-selling. Have you met him?
No, I haven't.
He's got one of the best-selling books in the business world, and it's called The Speed of Trust. And his whole premise is the last remaining no-cost bastion of leverage for the entrepreneur is trust. If you can learn to master trust, people buy sooner with less resistance. They negotiate less. They buy more. They buy more often. Your team works for you well. If you want maximum trust, trying to win it with a cold ad in an outside, whether it's radio, TV, doesn't really matter. where you really win it is getting somebody who's been dealing with the market that you want to reach for years, who has performed consistently, who has demonstrated their credibility, their integrity, their follow through, their ideological and moral. Fiber to tell people, hey, Mark or Jay are the people you want to turn to, and that instantly transfers all the cumulative years and millions of dollars of expenditure those other companies or associations or publications have right. invested in their goodwill over to you, and you get access to all those people who trust you instantly.
Wow.
And
wow.
That's a very powerful technique.
Boy, and the ability to win trust. Well, I haven't had Stephen Covey on my show, but maybe a good word from you, and maybe we can get him on, right?
He's
Matt?
A wonderful man. Yeah, I talk to him not infrequently, so he's a wonderful man.
I would love to. Well, you know,
so is his father, Stephen R. Covey, the one that did the Seven Habits.
That's highly effective people. A classic, an absolute classic. Folks, we are today talking to Jay Abraham, the really number one marketer in the world, and he has a new book, and we're talking about that today. So it is called The Sticking Point Solution, and check it out. I guess the book's available everywhere.
Anywhere you buy books, and yeah. It's one of those great things that it's so inexpensive that it's if you got a business, I mean, and I'm not trying to be crass, we created it to help struggling businesses survive and thrive, and, yeah. and somebody needs to help a lot of people right now. Hopefully this book will be a really good lifeline for them.
This book is selling very well. We can see we have the obviously the analytics for Google, and we can see this book is selling very well. So congratulations to you, and I want to encourage people to get it. Listen, here's a great way for folks to really navigate their way through what is a difficult time, certainly. So go get it right now. You can go on, buy it on Amazon.com. It is called The Sticking Point Solution, 9 Ways to Move Your Business from Stagnation to Stunning Growth in tough economic times. And well, Jay, this has been very exciting. We'd love to have you back again. It's been too long. We just don't want to wait for you to have a new book to come out to have you back. So
I don't do that often. Mark, Eric, it's a pleasure. I mean, I'm honored that you took time to spend with me, and I hope that my ideas had some value.
Oh, great. Stay on the line. We'll want to chat. Folks, talking to Jay Abraham, when we come back, we will have more stuff. We're going to talk about some of the scams out there and how to get around them and what's happening in the loan business. So don't go anywhere, because we will be right back. The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster, and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know, and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at ComplianceProster.com. Ha!
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network. My name is Mark Dio, and with me, of course, Mr. Matthew Walker. We are your small business advocates. And, you know, today we're talking about really having success and getting unstuck and really, you know, having turning a difficult marketplace into something positive with our good friend Jay Abraham. Boy, I tell you, you know, Jay really, you know, not only a brilliant guy, Matthew, but what a humble guy. I mean, you know, what a great heart.
Equally nice on the air as well as off.
I mean, really.
Sometimes you
really
get people where they put on an air of being nice on the air, but then when you get off, they're not so nice. But Jay Abraham was very pleasant to deal with all the way around.
Very sweet guy. Very sweet guy. So I'm very excited, and hopefully he invited me to visit. So hopefully we can visit maybe next week, and that'll be exciting. We'll talk more about that. And I am also, you know, also on our show, Matthew, we really do feel a responsibility, folks, to keep you informed of what's happening. I just want to quickly say, Matthew, this week wrote an article which was, again, published in Entrepreneur Magazine, picked up by Reuters, and really, I don't know if you know this, I have to forward them to you, Matt, but was picked up by a whole bunch of small publications all over the country, off the wire, off the Reuters wire. And the article is called, you know, will the SBA's ARC save anyone? Or will anyone be saved by the SBA's new ARC? And also referring to my article several weeks ago with Entrepreneur, talking about the ARC loan program and how the you know, in fact, the ARC loan program is a great idea, $35,000 interest-free loan, which you wouldn't have to even start paying for until, you know, 1 year after you received the proceeds. Sounds really exciting, right? Problem is there's 27 million small businesses in the U.S., Matt, and there's only 10,000 loans available.
Yeah.
But I did a little more digging on this. An entrepreneur asked me to look into it deeper, and I did. And I spoke to numerous banks and spoke to the SBA. You know, and it turns out that the way this loan is structured, there's no upside for the banks. And of course, the big banks, even if there was an upside, could care less. They want to keep the money anyway. The only bank that I could find that is actually offering this loan, well, there's two of them, Farmers and Merchants, which is just a local bank here. But the only national bank that I talked to, and I talked to all of them, I won't name all their names, but you could just think of all of them, Matt. Mm-hmm. All of them. The only one is Wells Fargo, and they have a waiting list of 12,000 people so far.
And
now, there's only 10,000 loans!
Well, and even that, they're not – they wouldn't be allowed under the terms of the program to give
only
out
1,000. Only 1,000.
More than 1,000, right?
Only 1,000.
And it has to be spread across the country too.
The only bank I know – now, there's probably some small banks, you know, around the country that are doing this. So I guess my advice is this whole – this whole thing with this stimulus plan is just a joke. It's an absolute joke. I don't know where the $800 billion is going, Matthew, but is not going to small businesses. And if it doesn't go to small businesses, there's going to be thousands and thousands, tens of thousands fail, and this economy is going to be way worse off than we are now. So if there's any
– It's $1.6 trillion because we gave away
$750
to $800 billion to these banks in the fall, and then again in the spring – distributing much more money, of which only a small part is actually being used to really do anything, you know, build some roads or actually do something practical. At least for that,
maybe
we've got
70 billion.
To show for
maybe 70 billion. Maybe.
Yeah. But at even least that money, you could look at it and say, okay, we know where this went, but 95% of it went off to these huge financial conglomerates that who knows what's happening to that money.
Who's holding them accountable?
It's paying somebody's yacht off, probably.
It's pretty sad. So if you get a chance, folks, go check it out at entrepreneur.com. Just type in Mark Dio at Entrepreneur, and it'll take you right to the right to them. And you know what I would encourage you to do is you know, just send your comments, because anytime you send a comment to me, and I've probably received like 30 or 40 of them, Matt, believe it or not. Some of them, some strange people out there, mm-hmm. but some of them, some very, you know, very concerned people that have been looking for loans and can't find them, and said, Mark, you know, thanks for telling us this, because it kind of helps us to realize that, you know, we have to maybe look at smaller banks. But if you're interested in anything, any information on it, let me know. I do have a couple of banks that are doing this that are very small, but, if you're a Wells Fargo customer, I guess you can stand online there. But nevertheless, wanted to bring that out. And, you know, just so we know, Matthew, even though people say, like the government says they're doing all these wonderful things, they're not doing a damn thing for us. They're not doing a damn thing. And, you know, there's a lot of scams out there. We have to, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, Matthew, it usually is. I think you discovered a scam that's happening for business owners that are looking for to lease property.
Well, yeah, right? It's primarily on business owners in New York City who already own a business. They've been in business at a location. Their leases are coming up near to where they're going to expire. And apparently what's going on a lot in New York City is up to a third of all small business owners are being asked to pay additional money under the table to their landlords. Not reported anywhere, just hidden, slide an envelope across the table.
That's not legal. That's like the mafia.
That's what they're doing, though. They're being told by these landlords, up to a third of all small business owners in New York City. So imagine how many that's got to be. Tens of thousands of businesses there, of course.
Where's Rudolph Giuliani when you need him?
And what's going on, apparently, is they're being demanded that they turn over some money just for the privilege to renegotiate a lease extension.
Sure.
Otherwise, they're saying, if you're not going to slip me some money under the table, I'm just going to kick you out of business, and I'm going to put you out of business.
I'm going to lose your renewal agreement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the old Seinfeld where Elaine is looking for it. Is it George? One of them's looking for an apartment, because it was so hard to get an apartment in New York, and I think it's a little easier these days. But in those days, you know, back in the 70s or the 80s, 90s, it was very, very difficult to find a place to live out there. And, you know, she gets bribed, or, you know, the gal wants to bribe her to take the apartment next door. And
somebody offers a lot of money for the apartment.
Right. Yep. So she can't get it. Well, this is the same kind of thing, only, I mean, is there a crackdown? I mean, is the...
Well, apparently there's a Queens council member
housing
by the name
department?
Of Tony.
I mean, the housing department has to crack down on that, right?
Well, they're not houses, unfortunately. These are just...
No. The housing department in the city of New York, there's a department of housing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least there is a council member named Tony Avella, who's actually also a candidate for mayor in New York, who has come out and strongly been talking about this. He's condemning the practice, and he's proposing some legislation there in the city that will provide for a crackdown on this activity, because it really isn't legal. These people are trying to skirt the laws of what they're allowed to do in terms of how, you know, fair negotiation practices are. And it just seems to me it's a little bit shady and underhanded. And if anybody out there is being required to do this, I really strongly encourage them to contact the local authorities to talk about this.
Matthew, that was Hillary Clinton that just called. I don't know if you heard the phone ring there, but that was Hillary Clinton. And she's going to look into this.
Secretary of State. She could get right on it.
And, you know, of course, she has a love of, as she said, they can't do this to my New Yorkers. That's just what Hillary said to me just now. So you heard the phone ring. So
I heard it ring, so yes.
Yes, absolutely. That was Hillary. And so she's going to jump right on this. And this is the power, folks, of the Small Business Hour. Just so you know that how immediate the attention is. So if you have an issue, call us, and we'll take care of it.
Yeah, I mean, members of some of the community boards there have described it as a citywide pandemic. She says there are up to 12 stores on Hudson Street alone that are empty, and the village is starting to look like a ghost town.
Well, of course. I mean, who Who would want to do this? They just walk away. You know, they go across the river to New Jersey or to Queens or to the Bronx, even,
yeah,
for that matter.
And
you know?
Really, it's short sighted thinking on the point of these unscrupulous landlords, anyway. So all they're going to get are people who are going to maybe pay them so much money that they're not going to be able to fund their business to the point where their business is going to close.
Well, that's I guess what our earlier guest, Mr. Jay Abraham, was talking about, is that it really is who you are, not what you do, folks. And so think your moral turpitude. You know, what are your morals? You don't have to match anybody else's. What are your morals? And, you know, what is ethical? What is fair? You know, if you practice that, it's going to come back to you. It will come back to you. So that about wraps up our show. Excited next week's 4th of July, but we will have a special guest, Matthew, and we'll find out who that is next week. So do tune in to the show. Also, check out the website, smallbusinesshour.com. All kinds of archives and special information and updates there for you. Our new video files are up. You can see Mark playing pool. Mark's playing pool. Yes. All sorts of fun things happening there.
You're doing more than just playing pool, but they can watch you play pool, yes.
You can watch you playing pool and talking about all the rules of attraction and giving some great examples there. And, of course, our leadership training for managers starting up now. Our sales course is also starting up in a couple of weeks, Matthew. You're going to be performing. Now, where is that going to happen, Matthew?
All over. I'll be back up at Lancaster again soon to go meet with the Lancasterites, Lancasterians, whatever they are. You can catch me in Oxnard again coming up soon. You can find me at the Ice House in Pasadena. Just go to myspace.com/funnymatt.
Funny Matt. There you have it, folks. You're listening to the Small Business Hour Radio on the SB Network. Join us next week. We will have that special guest. And do this week. Have a positive, a productive, and a very profitable week. We'll see you next week. The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.